Mariner Books and Harper Audio present Norwegian by Night by Derek B. Miller, performed by Mike Ortigo. For my son. Part 1. The 59th Parallel. Chapter 1. It is summer and luminous. Sheldon Horowitz sits on a folding director's chair, high above the picnic and out of reach of the food, in a shaded enclave in Oslo's Frogner Park. There is a half-eaten carbonata sandwich, that he doesn't like, on the paper plate cradled in his lap. With his right index finger, he's playing with the condensation on a bottle of beer that he started to drink but lost interest in some time ago. His feet twitch back and forth like a schoolboy's, but they twitch slower now at the age of 82. They achieve a smaller arc. Sheldon will not admit it to Rhea and Lars, never, of course not, but he can't help wondering what he's doing here and what he's going to do about it before the wonderment passes. Sheldon is an arm's length from his granddaughter Rhea and her new husband Lars, who is just now taking a long pull on his own beer and is looking so cheerful, so kind, so peppy, that Sheldon wants to take the hot dog from his hand and insert it up his nose. Rhea, who looks oddly pale today, would not respond well to this, and it might condemn Sheldon to further socializing excursions. So you can adjust. And in a world filled with fairness, Sheldon would not deserve them, nor Lars, the hot dog maneuver. But it had been Rhea's idea to move them from New York to Norway, and Sheldon, widowed, old, impatient, impertinent, saw in Lars' countenance a suppressed desire to gloat, none of which was fair. "Do you know why hot dogs are called hot dogs?" Sheldon says this aloud from his commanding position. If he had a cane, he would wave it, but he walks without one. Lars looks up in attention. Rhea, however, silently sighs. World War I. We were angry at the Germans, so we punished them by renaming their food. "Better than the War on Terror," he continued. "We're angry at the terrorists, so we punished the French by renaming our own food." "What do you mean?" asks Lars. Sheldon sees Rhea tap Lars on the leg and raise her eyebrows, implying, with the intensity of a hot poker, that he is not supposed to be encouraging these sorts of rants, these outbursts, these diversions from the here and now. Anything that might contribute to the hotly debated dementia. Sheldon was not supposed to see this poke, but does, and redoubles his conviction. "Freedom fries. I'm talking about freedom fries. Goodbye, French fry. Hello, freedom fry. An act of Congress actually concocted this harebrained idea. And my granddaughter thinks I'm the one losing my mind. Let me tell you something, young lady. I'm not crossing the aisle of sanity. The aisle is crossing me." Sheldon looks around the park. There is not the ebb and flow of random strangers one finds in any American metropolis, the kind who are not only strangers to us, but to each other as well. He is among tall, homogeneous, acquainted, well-meaning, smiling people, all dressed in the same transgenerational clothing, and no matter how hard he tries, he just can't draw a bead on them. Rhea, the name of a Titan, the daughter of Uranus and Gaia, heaven and earth, Cronus's wife, mother of the gods. Zeus himself suckled at her breast, and from her body came the known world. Sheldon's son, Saul, dead now, named her that to raise her above the banality that he steamed through in Vietnam with the Navy in 1973 and 74. He came home from the Riverine Force for 1 month of rest and relaxation before heading out for a second tour. It was a September. The leaves were out on the Hudson and in the Berkshires. According to his Mabel, vanished now, but once...
Sample complete. Ready to continue?